This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we have lots of exciting news from Microsoft's Build conference, Twitter celebrates its 10th anniversary, and the CRTC finally finds out that Canadians are dissatisfied with internet pricing. That's all up next and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 65 for Thursday, March the 31st, 2016. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Well, Derek, another absolutely busy and crazy week in tech in the last week. You and Jameson touched on a lot of the stuff out of the Apple event.
Yep.
But we've also got a lot of stuff happening from our friends in Redmond, Microsoft, and a few other anniversaries and stuff like that. So I think we're just going to have to get right to it.
Yeah.
First and foremost, Twitter turned 10 last week. Hard to believe. I've been on the service for eight of those years, and there was quite a few people writing about it, different opinions and stuff like that. Twitter certainly is, in some ways, it's brought the world closer together, for good or for bad, as we've seen. What are your comments, basically, about Twitter in general and your experience with it?
I still love it. It is my social network of choice. I spend a lot more time on Twitter than I do on Facebook, and way more than I do on Google+. I find that for me personally, I get a lot more out of it, whether it's interacting with other Londoners or other project managers or small business owners, that sort of thing. I find that it's much easier to find and follow people that I'm interested in, and that's a big part of that is the fact that the timeline is still chronological as opposed to the filtered algorithmic timeline that Facebook does and is bringing over to Instagram, which I'm really disappointed about, actually.
Right.
I really enjoy it, and I get a lot more out of it than I do anywhere else. And you said you joined in 2008. Apparently, I did as well. June 2nd, 2008, at 6:18 p.m., to be precise. I wasn't even living in Middlesex County at this point. I was living in Kitchener. So,
there you go.
Yeah, so it's come with me. It's come along with me to three or four different households at this point.
Exactly.
And I'm not leaving anytime soon, so...
Yeah, I have to agree. My situation's fairly similar. I've met a lot of awesome people thanks to Twitter.
Thanks to Twitter.
Well, exactly. I met you, and I met a lot of other people. I got some work through Twitter.
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly. There's a great community. And that's one thing that Twitter's done very well. It's brought the community together. It's definitely different than Facebook. It's a whole different space.
Yes.
Unlike Facebook and things like that. But yeah, exactly. It's really good for bringing community together, people you wouldn't normally meet. The dark side, of course, that openness has brought a lot of trolls and a lot of hatred and hate speech and stuff that. You have to have the bad with the good, and I wish they'd be a little bit more aggressive on stuff like that. But it's a fine line, and anytime you have law enforcement, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later on, it's a fine line between personal freedom and enforcement and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a challenge. Thing for the company, because again, trying to find a revenue model for something like this. So, hopefully they'll keep going. Yeah, I can see myself you still using it. I've certainly changed my use over the years. I currently use some apps to really kind of. I used to just follow my entire timeline. Now I'm a little bit more selective. How I curate things, just because there is so much happening. It's essentially a tool, just like real life. If you overuse it and you get too much, then yeah, it can be overwhelming. So there's definitely tools and apps out there. One thing I am a little bit annoyed with Twitter, they're getting rid of the native Windows client for TweetDeck. So I'm a little bit annoyed about that. So I have to use it through the browser, which is a little bit more of a pain, frankly, just the way I work. And I know a lot of people don't like that. So.
Sure.
Yep, exactly. But they're moving with the time as well. So I guess we can say happy birthday, Twitter, and hopefully they'll be around for another 10 years.
Yeah, I really hope so. If anybody's interested in hearing a little bit more from the founders about building Twitter and how that went, especially in the early days and how often they felt like they had to listen to the users, and how that informed things like the at symbol and hashtag, which apparently the official name for that character is actually the Octothorpe.
Yes.
Which I thought was really interesting. So the Twitter actually had Chris Hardwick, also known as the Nerdist, come down to San Francisco and moderate a discussion about Twitter in the last 10 years. And they agreed to let Nerdist put it up as a podcast. So you can actually listen to Chris Hardwick. Oh, and they streamed it live on Periscope, of course. So, yeah, you can listen to Chris Hardwick interview Jack Dorsey, Ev Williams, and Biz Stone. Ev and Biz did most of the talking. Jack was surprisingly quite quiet. Maybe that's because he's CEO and he gets to say lots of things already. And
probably.
Whereas Biz and Ev have both moved on. Ev founded Medium and Medium.com, and I'm not sure what Biz Stone's up to. But regardless, it was a good 45-minute-ish discussion. And, so you can check that out on, I'm sure, Nerdist.com, lots of podcast apps, etc. So, here's to Twitter turning 10, and can't wait till it's a teenager. And see how moody it gets.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on. So last week or earlier this week, the FBI basically said they managed to find a way to unlock the phone of the San Bernardino shooter without getting Apple involved. The rumors say they held help from a third-party agency, possibly an Israeli company that's known for doing stuff like this from iOS 8 and below.
Celebrate.
Yeah, but no one's confirmed anything yet. But it does kind of bring up the question of, it's definitely showing that could the FBI really not get into this phone without Apple's factor? Were they definitely trying to set a precedence with a case here? And I think in some ways, by them doing this and then backing away, it's going to harden people's opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've already seen, for example, in Arkansas, the FBI has already agreed to unlock another phone there involving a murder case.
The FBI or Apple?
The FBI.
Oh, okay.
The FBI. For an Arkansas prosecutor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's involving a murder case. And again, all of a sudden now the FBI is saying, yeah, we can do that for you. So they've delayed that. So, it brings to mind, too, is anytime they find, and if they have found an exploit,
clearly,
or a bug, and there is some laws in the book in the U.S. how if an agency finds something, they are supposed to let the original manufacturer know because it is an exploit, potentially. Now, the language has been written to allow law enforcement not necessarily to do it, but in my eyes, you know Apple's going to be trying to figure something out here. They're going to definitely be looking into what did we miss.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't want this. And as I talked to briefly before, it's a fine line. Where do we draw the line between, law enforcement and people's personal, freedoms, essentially? And I agree with Apple, if they had to written a back door, it was going to get out. Now, the question is by the FBI not telling them if there is a known exploit, are they putting other Apple's users, including potentially their own staff, at risk for foreign governments, foreign terrorists, whatever you want, that could hack into this hole?
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. Yes, they are putting a billion users at risk of leaving this exploit out there in the open. We're not in the open, but leaving this exploit open for potential hacking, because now, of course, there's going to be very sophisticated organized criminal gangs and that sort of thing who are going to be looking for the exact same thing. If the FBI or this Israeli company, or maybe it was somebody else, if they figured it out, we can figure it out too.
Yep.
Now everybody's going to be looking for this exploit, Apple included. Don't be surprised if iOS 9.3.1 is released within the next month, and it says that there are security fixes, because they're going to look, and they're going to have to turn. I don't know what sort of process they go through now, but I mean, Google has a bounty program for this very reason, because they know that they can't find them all themselves.
Right.
And that's been very successful at proving that something like Chrome OS is extremely hard to break into. Not impossible, but extremely hard. And helping to harden Android. So Android 6.0, I mean, I feel really quite confident in it. And same with iOS 9.3, so mm-hmm. or iOS 9 in general. But yeah, you can't look inwards all the time. You have to engage with the hacking community or the cracking community,
right?
In order to really make sure that you've got all your security ducks in a row.
And now I have heard. Sorry, if I just talking about the whole bounty thing. I have heard that Apple doesn't really want to get into that because there's concern about a price war will come out because, you know, in some cases, if a company offers you, let's say, $100,000, but you know, Hydra or another, you know, nefarious gang or something.
You had to go with Hydra.
I had. Well, I just watched Deadpool the other night, so we're into the Marvel thing right now.
Sure.
So yeah, whoever. But if they offer someone else $1 million or whatever, you know, are we going to get into a price war? So I did hear that that's possibly one of the reasons Apple doesn't get into that. So, you know, and again, that raises an interesting point too. You've got to make it good enough that people are going to get in. But then, you know, if someone says, "Oh, I'll give you this," but oh, you know, this organization over here offered me $200,000. Why don't you pay me $200,000 instead of $100,000?
Yeah. Well.
Again, it's okay, just something I heard sure. the other day on another podcast.
Yeah, that's a fair point to make, but, you know, good white hat hackers will do the right thing. And
hopefully.
And chances are, if an exploit is possible to find, more than one person is going to find it. So
right.
you really want to be first because you actually want to collect the sure thing. I would not trust some third party, potentially nefarious organization to actually pay me if I gave them enough info.
Wouldn't trust Hydra, Derek.
No, I would not trust Hydra to actually pay me. Oh, chances are I'd give them the exploit and then they'd knock me off. So
or they'd hire you to find more.
Yes, and chain me to a desk all day. Yeah, no,
exactly.
I'd much rather hand the information over to Apple or Google or Microsoft or Amazon, who I'm confident
right.
would actually give me the bounty in return
right.
for the exploit. But anyway, I was not surprised by the fact that somebody figured out a way to help the FBI. No
yep.
doubt made some good money on it. And
yep.
now, of course, the FBI is going to use this exploit in as many cases as they can.
Exactly.
Because I'm confident it will get found by Apple or a friend of Apple's. And
yep.
plugged within the next 60 days at the most.
Yeah. Yeah. And as long as the FBI isn't silly enough to plug those phones in to get an update, then those ones are still, you know, not,
oh,
that, you
no,
know, not
they
that
would
they've
never
known,
do
been known
like
to do
that.
Anything silly before.
No. Okay. So, in a completely different topic, the
yes.
Oculus Rift is now shipping. So, whether you, I think this is primarily for Kickstarter backers, right?
Right.
Because I think this is the third time Kickstarter backers are getting a unit.
I think so, yeah.
Fantastic.
I think so.
At least the second, because they all got dev units. And,
right.
And so, you know, for the money you pay to get into the Kickstarter, you've gotten a really good deal.
Oh, exactly.
And now we all know that the system requirements are currently quite up there. It would cost you about $1,500 US to build a capable system. So a little over 2,000 Canadian.
Right.
But those people are out there, and I wish all the best to anyone who has a capable system and an Oculus Rift, and I really hope to actually get my hands on one just to try it out for 20 minutes. Derek Martin, I'm looking at you. Because
exactly.
I haven't actually had the opportunity to try any VR system since the Virtual Boy from Nintendo back in the early
right,
90s.
Right. Well, we also definitely have to make sure that, you know, Derek decides to upgrade a system to, you know, get himself a good gaming system or we'll just get his boss David Bilson. If they have a good Star Wars game, you know Bilson will be doing that. So
Battlefront.
A shout out to both David and Derek there, that just, you know, something to think about. I'm
yes.
sure they can find a way to, you know, business expense it or something.
Oh, absolutely. Our traction can pay for it.
There you go. So, exactly.
And in related news, the HTC Vive, which I believe is shipping next month, late next month, apparently the pre-orders are doing really well.
Yeah, you were saying that. Holy cow, these
yeah.
numbers are unbelievable.
Yeah, so it's $100 US more than, more than the Oculus Rift.
You were thinking the Oculus Rift upgrade when you put the price in there.
Yes, I was. Yeah, $15,000. Sorry, we're referring to the show notes, folks. You'll see it later.
You'll see it later. Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently, in the first 10 minutes, they sold pre-sold 15,000 HTC Vive headsets, yeah, which is amazing. I mean, that's a huge number in such a short amount of time for something that costs $700 or $800 US. And we do have a Canadian price, $1,149.
And
so basically, you're looking at almost $3,000 to put together a Rift or Vive capable system, and to get the headset as well. If you're paying,
this is times where I hate the exchange, but at the same time, like, I'm a flight sim guy and a combat flight sim guy, and this is what I would use it for. It just, yeah, I'm looking at these, and it's like one day I would just love to get one.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I just realized I messed up the links here, so I got to fix that.
All right, that's fine. By the time people hear this, the links will be fixed and yeah, you know, sure, whatnot. But yeah, but it still shows, you know. Was it Oculus or Vive that someone made the comment? Someone asked them, "When are you going to make one for Apple?" And someone said, "Oh, when Apple makes a decent system."
That was Oculus.
That was Oculus.
That was, you know, because what's his name? Yeah. Lucky Palmer.
Was that who? Okay, I remember hearing that. I went, ooh. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it still shows PC gaming still a thing. Like, I've, you know, I love my Mac, don't get me wrong, but I still have a PC, and primarily the only thing I need it for, quote unquote, is for gaming, because mm-hmm. I still do a lot of PC gaming, and you know, there's pretty well everything else I could do on the Mac in theory. But yeah, you know, and I still like the gaming side. There's quite a bit you can run on the Mac, but yeah, something like this, when you see some of the new stuff and you get these guys running 6 screens and you know, just yeah.
You mean
just,
like Swordfish?
Hacker
and Swordfish? 6 screens and this little swoopy Nike logo looking thing going around and around.
Exactly. Yeah. Stuff like that. And yeah, you just do a Google search for multi-monitor gaming rigs and you'll be very frightened. You'll want to hang on to your wallet, folks. So yeah, 15,000 units. Wow.
Yeah. So wow, good luck. I mean, it's great. I'm glad that it's not a one horse race. And quite frankly, from what I've seen, I would prefer to have the HTC Vive at this point, in terms of the gaming library or the software library, the developers behind the device, that being HTC and Valve, who makes the very popular Steam gaming platform and is right, a big Linux backer at this point. So yeah, I'm really pushing for the Vive, especially to see HTC survive as a company.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, competition's inherently healthy. Exactly. Yeah. We've seen that in every other industry. It's not always the more the merrier, but you know, I always like to say I'd like to see at least 3 players, but even at this point, 2 is a good start.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, it's definitely a whole new area. And it obviously shows, you know, the companies know people have the money and they're willing to spend.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, if you look at gamers, you know, although I have to say, as an aside, as an old guy, I always think it's funny. Over the last 20 years of gaming, you have these people that buy the top of the line graphics card, like thousands for a graphics card that mm-hmm. will render billions of pixels. They go to a LAN party or they go to a competition. What's the first thing they do? They turn down all the graphic options of the game so they can get a higher frame rate. Oh, why are you buying the new card?
Yeah.
I always think that's funny.
Yeah, I do too. I like frame rate's great, of course, it's important, but you know, if you're going to blow $600-$700 on an Nvidia GTX 980, man, like turn it up. Like turn up all the specs, cuz I want to see it look as lifelike as possible. Yep. Then give me a plastic gun and let me have some fun.
Yeah, I always think it's funny though, because like I remember when, you know, we'd play a lot of Quake and or Unreal Tournament. It's like, yeah, you're too busy trying to survive to look at the pretty blood splatter.
that's why these guys would turn it. Yes.
And that's something we'd always joke about. I used to host back when I was younger and single. Wonder if that's related. We would have like 20 guy LAN parties here and, you know, play a lot of Unreal Tournament. Yeah, that's the thing. There was one or two guys at the high end cards. First thing they do, turn it all down. Exactly. All right, let's move on. Microsoft. Microsoft had a big week. They had their annual, is it annual Build conference? Annual? I think it's annual.
Yep.
And they had some pretty amazing stuff, including I saw you and Andrew Burdan talking about on Twitter last night.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna let you. I don't want to steal the thunder. I found this out from you.
That's okay. So this is mind-boggling in a lot of ways.
Folks, sit down right now.
Yes, sit down. Whether you're a geek or not, if you're listening to this, you probably are anyway, so sit down and just take this all in. A few months ago, Microsoft and Ubuntu announced, or Canonical rather, announced a partnership. We had very little ideas of what they were going to do together, and now we're seeing the first bits that are kind of literal bits, as a software, of course, coming out of that partnership. And Ubuntu has, I guess the best way to put it would say they have ported Bash. They've ported Ubuntu to run on Windows,
right.
Meaning that the vast majority of the Bash shell can now run natively from the Windows command line. So that's literally, you know, Windows button R, CMD, hit OK, and then type Bash and hit enter.
You get the Linux prompt. We all know.
You get the Linux command line with I've got some examples here of the sorts of commands you can run from a guy who actually works at Canonical. And so we're talking about running commands natively, like apt, SSH, rsync, find, MySQL, Python, curl, GPG, wget, diff, patch, and as he puts it, and most of the tens of thousands of binary packages available in the Ubuntu archives.
Yeah.
So it's
you can use Git, you can, you know, use app, what is it, app install?
Apt, yeah. So apt, get, install, you know, Git, install Apache, install MySQL, Python, PHP, whatever you need, GCC, compiler, tar, Vi. You want to use Vi on Windows? Go for it. Vi or Vim. I prefer Vi.
It's better than Emacs, but we won't get into that holy war.
Vi forever. I'm gonna get a tattoo just to prove it.
And some hate mail.
So email Stuart. So this is not a virtual machine. This is not a hypervisor. It's not a container. This is not a Docker thing.
Yep.
Or a Kubernetes cool. or anything like that. It's not Cygwin. It's
natively
basically
baked
it's
in.
It's reverse Wine. So where people were taking Windows executables and DLLs and porting them to Linux, this is basically the exact opposite of that. And so that this runs natively in Windows in the command line. I love Windows GUI and the amount of software that's available for it with GUIs. And that's the one thing I usually miss going to Linux. So this is really, for me personally, the best of both worlds. I can work in Windows most of the day. I can use Photoshop. I can use Microsoft Word. And then when I actually want to do some serious work from the command line, I can run it. I can type in Bash, and I can actually start installing Ubuntu or like Linux binaries. Like it's crazy to think of.
Yeah, and this is what I know some people in the Dev London group were talking about this. And, you know, as a couple of them point out, it's like this is a big reason where, you know, before people were – a lot of devs were moving to Apple because it was all baked in. Well, this may get some people, you know, back again. And, you know, it just proves they're listening. And they're definitely, you know, they seem to be getting it. Microsoft's far from perfect. Don't quote me to say Microsoft's perfect, but they're certainly realizing the road road they're doing. And as I said in another forum, I said, I feel Microsoft's in a far better place and going down a far better path than it was a few years ago.
Yeah. And so Jameson, who is frequently on the show, he had said, you know, this is there has to be some sort of cash grab somewhere. Yeah, of course there is. Because if you come back to Windows as your daily OS, now you don't have to leave in order to do what many would consider proper web development or proper app development. You can do it all from the command line now using the Bash shell, and it helps entice people over to the Windows ecosystem now. Forget Windows 10. I'm talking about Azure, HoloLens, SQL Server, which is getting ported to Windows as well, or to Linux as well. Covered that a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
I mean, like they haven't given up on the OS, but they're realizing that we can't force people to use the OS. We have to give them good reasons to use the OS itself. And if we can't, that doesn't mean that they can't use Microsoft software on top of their chosen OS. So Microsoft Office works great on Mac OS X. It would probably work great. For all I know, Ubuntu's rewriting or refactoring Office to run natively on Linux right now too, as part of this partnership. Now that is not outside of the realm of possibility. They can bring
and it gives people less reasons to think, oh, I have to move off the Microsoft platform to do this. And in the end, they're all tools.
Yeah,
and whatever works for people. So it's nice to see Microsoft's realizing that, hey, one solution may not work for anyone, but if we give these different options through, you know, and they're also realizing the OS space, the money's not there anymore. It's in the cloud. It's in services. We're seeing that in terms of their, you know, their Office 365 program. They've made it very easy to sign up. You know, they've made it very fair. You can have five machines on it. So, you know, a lot of people are going, why am I going to pirate this? I'll just buy it. It's, you know, $40 or whatever a year. Yeah. I get five machines on it and it works. It's there.
And it's really, I mean, the value proposition for paying for Office 365 is much, much better than it ever was buying a retail version of Office.
Certainly. Certainly.
It doesn't even compare. Like, the cost benefit is so much different now with Office 365. So I don't have it yet, but personally, we do have it at work. We're using Office 365 for email now, and so we got Outlook and calendars and all that other fun stuff. Despite the fact that we all have MacBook Pros and do web development in text editors like Atom and Sublime Text and PHP Storm all day.
But you know what? I still like, you know, I love my Gmail account and stuff like that. But there's times I still miss a good email client. And I liked Outlook.
I played with it a little bit.
And, you know, there's nothing to say you can't use both. You know, Google Docs is a fairly good solution, but there's still a lot of stuff lacking, particularly, you know, when I was at Ellipsis, we noticed on the document side, like things like table of contents and stuff like that. It just doesn't do yet. So,
well,
you know,
Pages does that.
Yeah, exactly. So depending on what you're looking for, and as you say, you know, Microsoft certainly created an environment now where they've got, you know, and I see I've just had a senior moment. Windows equivalent of Google Drive, OneDrive.
OneDrive.
You know, they've got that, so people can collaborate on documents and things like that.
Yeah, the sharing is not as good. It's not real time like Google, but it is much better than it was a couple of years ago. So as long as they keep iterating, they're going to get there, and they actually care now. So that's good.
Yeah, they've kept themselves in the game, and there was a lot of people worried about them a few years ago. And again, I love to see competition. I love both. I love both products. You know, and it's, as I said, in the end, they're tools. Whatever works for someone. I don't subscribe to the old fanboy theory anymore. If someone wants to be in command line in Red Hat or Ubuntu all day, great. That works for them.
Good for them.
You know, someone else may be a Windows guy all day. You know, I'm a little bit of both a Mac and a Windows guy. You know, and it's definitely getting better. So we're really pleased about that. So we also have some other stories. Microsoft also had another announcement at their Build conference. They're planning to offer an ad blocker in their new Edge browser. This kind of makes me chuckle. I'm sure this was planned before the news that you and Jameson talked about last week about another major malware attack on an ad network, including, I believe he said, the New York Times and stuff like that. But, you know, the usual industry ad agency says, oh, this hurts our business. But I can't help but thinking until they clean up their own act, there's very few sites that I will whitelist.
Yeah, and Ars Technica is usually one of them, or, you know, the New York Times and that Wired, for instance. But the ad networks those big sites all use all got hacked. So, you know, even that, like, oh, well, the sites that are usually safe or that I would want to make sure I'm still supporting were under attack. So what do you do then? You know, I just happened not to get anything during that time period. But, I mean, this is great. Microsoft will win... win hearts and minds with this sort of move. Edge is a pretty good browser. It's fast. I don't use a Windows machine all day, so I haven't tried it. I haven't tested it much.
Yeah, I'm the same. I don't use it a lot.
Yeah, and it's still not perfect. It still doesn't have perfect standard support for HTML and CSS and that sort of thing. But it's much, much better than it was. So it's a much better viable option than Internet Explorer, even up to version 11, ever was. And so apparently, according to Microsoft, they've already got 200 million devices running Windows 10. And so those all have Edge available to them, whether people are using them or not. I haven't looked at the browser market share numbers lately, but maybe it's something we can talk about next week.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. They had a bunch of other announcements. Derek, anything you want to point out?
Yeah, we'll do this real quick because we've got links in the show notes. So bots and Cortana are obviously a really big part of Microsoft's future, or at least they feel like it is. And Cortana even acting as like a middleware type thing where basically, this is really big in Asia. WeChat and Line and more recently... Facebook's doing this as well in Messenger. And then Telegram is the other app where you can actually build a bot, or Slack, of course, that you can interact with. And essentially, they want to leave Cortana in the middle because Cortana can actually interpret natural language, right? So you can say, "Hey, Cortana, I want to order a medium pizza with pepperoni on it, and pay with my Visa." And Cortana will actually structure that request in a way that the bot will actually understand whether it's linear, like the bot asks a particular question first and then Cortana gives it the appropriate answer, or what is probably essentially an XML file in the back end being sent over, so, and making sure that the bot understands the order as you provided it. So like Just Eat, which is actually a service that's available here in Canada, for ordering pizza, Domino's as well. Domino's Pizza, or Microsoft showed how to make a Domino's Pizza bot with their tools, and it would work across multiple apps. It supports natural language thanks to the Cortana Intelligence Suite that provides that framework, like I was just saying. So this is really cool. Like I've wanted to just, I can't get a legit Amazon Echo here in Canada yet. Well, if Microsoft's going to beat Amazon to the punch and give me this first, I'd be happy to have a Microsoft Surface Book or Surface Pro 4 on my kitchen island and just say, "Hey, Cortana, you know, order me a pizza from Pizza Pizza with, you know, this, this, and that on it, and I want it delivered, and I want to pay with debit at the door."
Yep, if
they can just sort all that out, even though it sounds like a little out of order, awesome. That's exactly what I want.
Yeah, and as long as it orders it from Pizza Pizza and not Domino's.
Yes.
Or some other great pizza places we have. Definitely not Domino's. There was actually this week in Tech 2 weeks ago, they were talking about this with the Echo and Domino's, and there was a running joke about, you know, some of them like Domino's, some of them said Domino's sucks. So
yes,
I had to throw that in.
Yeah, some of them like Domino's, some of them like real pizza, I think was the line that they used.
Basically.
And Skype is going to play a part in this as well. Cortana is going to broker the conversation from within Skype. There was a bot from a company called Cups and Cakes that asked for an address for delivery. So, I mean, like that, it's getting really cool where you can offer what will feel like a highly personalized service to your customers, and yet you're not really involved.
And as long as you can lock it out from your children so your son doesn't say, "Can I have 15 Meat Lovers pizza on Dad's credit card?"
If Google now can recognize that I'm speaking and not one of my coworkers, so that they can't ask for naked grandpa butts or something like that on my phone, but surely to goodness, Cortana can figure out Derek is talking, not his younger son, who sounds completely different because he's six.
Sounds like you've had some interesting coworkers too.
No, I just listen to some really funny podcasts.
Okay.
The next version of Windows 10, like the next big update is coming this summer. That's great. Yep. We've talked briefly about universal Windows apps that work across devices. They're making updates to that to make sure that that things work. Starbucks is working on it. Uber, mm-hmm. Vine, Bank of America for the U.S., the WWE. It will suplex you into their universal app and a bunch of games.
That was good. That was quite good there. You got to do that on the fly.
They've got this thing called Windows Ink that will let you use a stylus to write just about anywhere on any app. Cool. You can draw a line on a map to get your directions and stuff like that. That looks really cool. Of course, there was Bash coming to Windows, the Bash shell. HoloLens has started shipping to developers. So if somebody has 3,000 US they'd like to lend me, or rather grant me, because I don't want to pay it back. Please do. I've got some folks who I think might actually help us pay for that. So cool. So we can actually, you know, do some.
I'm just thinking, you know, the World Cup's coming up, and you know, I know someone. I know one of us is a bit more of a Portugal fan than the other person. You know, and they're going to be in the cups, so you know, maybe an app that works with that.
Sure. And apparently, just backing up a little bit. So, a few weeks ago, Microsoft talked about only having to write a game once, basically,
yes,
for Windows or Xbox. And so, someone named Phil Spencer was on stage and showed how you could download Age of Empires 2 HD from Steam, Age of Empires being a Microsoft game, and easily convert it to a universal app. And this also worked for The Witcher 3. So yep, that's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
And so that would give you access to live tiles, notifications, et cetera, within the games or within start menu.
Well, so I'm looking forward as a PC gamer to be able to see some of the late Xbox titles come over to PC.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that. Yeah, exactly. So that's,
yeah, absolutely.
That raises hopes.
Yeah. So, I mean, Microsoft's pushing in a lot of different directions, but it seems like, but it's still somewhat focused because it's like, okay, we're going to do this, and now we're pushing this, and we're pushing it, and we're pushing it, and we're going to make sure it's doing well, and then we'll, you know, so each, like, they have a bunch of different divisions, right? So each division seems like they're really pushing the envelope in one way or two, and it seems to be working. I'm actually excited about Microsoft again and Windows.
Well,
so,
exactly. And I just wanted to point out another thing that came out of the Build conference is they'll also admit if there's something that's not in their focus or something they're just not going to prioritize. And they've talked about this with Windows Phone this year. You know, the Windows chief, Terry Myerson, briefly had a statement. We're fully committed to that 4-inch screen. There will be a time for it to be our focus. But right now, it's part of the family, but it's not the core of where I hope to generate developer interest over the next year. So, you know, they also realize they can't be everywhere at once. And they're being clear to their partners and the customers. And, you know, like, I know some people out there that still love, you know, they've actually had two Windows phones over the years. They had one and then they loved it so much they had another one.
Yeah.
You know, granted, it's about the only guy I know that does, but, you know, still, you know, so, hey.
I think I know.
Yeah, you know exactly. He lives in Kamoka. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, him. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's me. Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's good.
So now, of course, you're going to need to download all this stuff. And
yes, and we're in Canada.
How you feel about that will highly depend on A, how much money you make, B, where you live, and therefore C, how expensive a good internet connection is at home. Stuart, it looks like the CRTC finally went to the people.
they did indeed.
And found out that across 29,000 Canadians who voluntarily answered an open online survey, and then a separate, more quote-unquote representative group of 1,600 Canadians, polling done by ECOS, it found that only 1-2% of respondents had no home internet. I guess that's good. I'm sure the number is much higher.
Yeah, it's got to be.
because there's like, well, even if you just count native reserves and anything north of the, let's say the 70th parallel, yeah, there's going to be a lot less, at least good connectivity, and it's probably mostly wireless further than that. However, 38% of the respondents in the open survey, the online survey, and 20% of those in the quote-unquote representative surveys had no home phone whatsoever. So regardless, you're looking at about a quarter of the population or of households that probably have no home phone whatsoever. And then 10% of the open survey respondents and 7% of the representative survey respondents had no mobile phone. So clearly, so you're probably looking at, you know, 8 or 9%, somewhere between the 7 and 10. That's a really small number for the people who don't have a cell phone whatsoever.
Exactly. And of course, it also says here half of us were dissatisfied with the price of the internet service.
Yeah.
You can take that, you know, with a grain of salt, because we all love to complain about price. But yeah, we are in Canada. We are one of the highest, we get billed one of the highest rates in the Western world. And, you know, we all say it's amazing how identical the three big providers plans seem to change. You know, it's, I'm sure it's just coincidence.
Oh, after all. Yeah, no,
you know, oh, really? You ended up doing that too? What a surprise.
Yeah.
So, and we, of course, we've talked about the issues with rural. There's a rural-urban digital divide. I know my mom's facing that right now, and like she's literally 5 minutes west of you.
Yeah.
They're still waiting to get. Yep, exactly. So that needs to change. We definitely, you know, we're going into a, from an industrial to a digital future. We know there's challenges in Canada because of the distance. I just think it's interesting how some of them, most popular response, well, you know, how do you solve it, is some combination of a CRTC fund, government, and market forces, where, you know, we look at how the government originally, you know, in both here and in the States, helped set up the phone network. And then they handed it over. You know, perhaps we need something the same.
Well, in Southwestern Ontario, we've got the what's it called? Swift.
Swift, yes.
And I provided this feedback a couple times to them, because Swift goes a long way to helping reduce this urban-rural divide. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it goes far enough, because it's only aimed at bringing a high-speed fiber optic connection to the community.
Yep.
It's not. It still doesn't solve that problem of the last mile.
Exactly.
And so you're not. So it's not going to be fiber to the home. So if anybody tells you Swift is going to get you fiber to the home, they're off their rocker. Not up to them. That is not up to. It's going to be completely up to the actual ISPs who choose to come in and build that last mile.
And we're having that, my mom is talking about my mom where she lives, they're having that exact issue right now. They've got a company that's willing to help them, but they're at the mercy of Bell. And gee, Bell's kind of taking their sweet time.
Or Rogers. Like, there's a Rogers hookup down the street. It's like 500 meters. Mm-hmm. And Rogers wants to bill that neighborhood, I guess would be the best way to put it, like 10 grand.
Yeah.
Don't even tell me it's going to cost you 10 grand, or that you can't make it work somehow with, you know, a small surcharge for the first year or two to say, you know, we just hooked you up and this was not something. Like, if you wanted to charge me an extra $5 or $10 a month for the first year or two to justify making this happen, I could live with that personally. And considering how much those folks are paying for wireless connectivity that only gets them a few gigabytes a month, I bet you a lot of them would be in for that. And, you know, and maybe after that first 2 years, it's like, okay, well, you know, we've recouped most of our costs. Let's end it here.
But this is the classic problem of these companies are looking only at the next quarter. And that's an industry wide, not in this industry, but everywhere. We could go down a whole other rabbit hole with that, but we won't.
Yeah.
But yeah, exactly. You know, and this is what it's going to take. So, you know, maybe it will take the government getting more involved and, you know, but yeah, I wish we'd see some quicker action on some of this, because, you know, based on what we saw with the skinny cable package, the CRTC isn't really acting very quick on that either. We've talked about that. So, okay, let's move on to an awesome local story. You go ahead.
Oh, my God, I can't wait for this.
Yes.
So I was at the Fanshawe College Employer Dinner last night on behalf of Oleo Digital Labs. Thank you to Brendan for letting me go. He's the owner of the company, but I got to go instead. And, met some really, really cool people, and then found out that the Canadian Center for Product Validation, which is an all-inclusive or all-encompassing product development and validation and testing lab, first of its kind in North America, doesn't exist anywhere else here. The next closest thing is down in Austin, Texas, and there's a almost year-long wait list to get your product tested there.
Right.
This is a much better facility, and it's opening in June, and I can't wait. And they're actually offering tours now, which is why I'm bringing this up. It's going
to
be
over. I think we're going to have to do it.
Oh, I'm going. I met the director last night, and he was thrilled to meet me, or at least he feigned thrilled.
He obviously doesn't know you yet. Wait a minute.
No. Him and I talked for a good period of time.
Awesome.
So it's over on Bonder Road, which is really close to the Windy Research Institute that Western runs to help test materials against hurricane and tornado conditions. You can check out the website at ccpv.ca. That's charliepetervector.charliealpha.ca.
And all the notes in the show notes with the link there.
Yes, there will be a link in the show notes, but if you want to go now, that's where you go. And
I think you and I are going to have to make a road trip.
Oh, we're going. Definitely. We're going. It's just off of the VMP and Bradley near there.
Awesome.
Yes, it's not like super far out of town. It's within the city boundaries, and they are going to be doing electrical, mechanical, thermal testing, stress testing. Like, I want to go break some things. I want to go heat some things up. I want to see what happens with some of these people's products. I would just camp out there for a week and just watch people test the heck out of their stuff. Here at Olio, we actually want to build a product. We're trying to decide exactly what sort of thing we want to build this year. I was running some ideas by the director, a gentleman named John Macaron, last night, and he got super excited. He wants to help us out. So if you are debating going into the product development field, especially a physical one, even if it's food or beverage, they will help you with that too. It doesn't have to be an electrical or mechanical thing. Definitely go check out the CCPV. They're opening soon. They are thrilled to meet people, entrepreneurs, product creation folks, and go check them out.
Exactly.
Tell them Derek sent you.
Yeah, it's something we'll have to. Yeah, we may have to do a road trip and take a reporter and
we're going
talk to definitely.
We're going.
See, he's going to put that together and we'll have a report at some point. Okay, we're almost done here. Stuff we like. I didn't really have a product this week, but I saw a really cute video online called Father of the Week. I have the link in the show notes, but basically you have to see it. It's a dad and his 2 or 3 year old daughter. Derek, you reckon?
Yeah, somewhere between 2 and 3, I'd say.
So he's instead of buying an Oculus Rift, he's doing VR his way. So he basically he's got a big screen TV. There's a YouTube video of a guy going down a hill on a mountain bike from an onboard camera, and he's actually she's on her little bike and he's bouncing it up and down and moving it around. It's really cute.
Yeah, it's really funny. It's like that is VR on the cheap.
Yeah, exactly. But yay, daughter doesn't care. She loves it.
Yeah.
And dad is once again cool. So, there we go. If dad's can stay cool, it's a good thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's crucial. You could not be the uncool dad.
Well, there you go. Or else, the uncool, the cool uncle takes over and then
then everybody's upset.
Okay, what do you got?
Yeah, so my pick of the week my thing I like is Mac only. Sorry, Mac OS only. So sorry to any Windows or Linux users out there. It is called Cheat Sheet. One problem I've had learning how to use Mac OS X is that I'm a big keyboard shortcut guy. And because Apple insists on including a command button and replacing...
I feel your pain.
And replacing almost all of the Windows keyboard shortcuts that use the control button with the command button. Or command and shift, which is massively annoying. This cheat sheet is a little applet that sits in the background. Applet, that's such an old term. It sits in the background.
I'm sorry.
And you bring it up by holding the command button for about 2 or 3 seconds. And when you do, it brings up app-specific keyboard shortcuts. I don't know how it works, but it's amazing. So if you're using Chrome or Safari or Microsoft Word or Slack or Sunrise Calendar or Skype, doesn't matter. It is completely it has obviously some sort of code that digs in and says, oh, what are the keyboard shortcuts programmed for this app? And brings them up on your screen. It even categorizes them. Like there's a screenshot here for Pixelmator on the website. So for instance, all the generic ones that will do, you know, across software type stuff, under the file command or file menu, new, open, close, etc., edit, copy, paste, duplicate, select all, etc., new layer, bring to front, bring forward, it gives you all of the keyboard shortcuts for all those different things. And so if you've just moved to Mac OS, or you're getting frustrated with Mac OS and are thinking about moving back to Windows or to Linux, just give this a shot first. And if it still doesn't work for you, feel free to leave. But
this is amazing. I wish I had this when I was first switching, because I had very similar issues, and you know, for a while I even remapped my keyboard, and I thought, no, that's not the way to do it. You gotta learn it. But
you can't. Like, I can't remap copy and paste. Right?
Yeah.
And
I can't I moved my command key. I moved the command key on my keyboard.
Oh.
So it was, if I pressed the control key, just because I was going between two of them, and it was like, and there was for various reasons. But then I realized
that's smart. I like that. That's good.
Yeah, it was good, but you also eventually realize, no, you got to do it this way. I was using it because I was running Synergy, which is an app that lets you share a keyboard and mouse across different computers.
Yeah,
and I had it on the Windows, and then, you know, it's just annoying. But I switched it back. But this is awesome. Yeah, I'm gonna download this and give this a whirl.
Cool.
Very, very cool.
And that does it. Move on to your next podcast.
Cool. All right. Yes, exactly. All righty. So I think we're about done here. This is an awesome one. And we'll try and get back on a more regular schedule, depending how people's work things are. For those who don't know, we try and record on either a Wednesday or a Thursday at lunchtime. And sometimes work and real life happens and stuff like that. So we can't always do it. So
stupid real life.
I know, stupid making money. If anyone wants to give us a couple of million, that, you know, we could just do this.
Yeah,
we certainly wouldn't mind. Yeah, that would work.
Oh, even like $2,000 or $3,000 a week, $2,000 a week would be more
than
enough.
So if you want to sponsor the show,
So if you want to sponsor the show for $1,000 or $2,000 a week, that would be great.
Know.
Yeah.
Yep. And we'll tell you, we can definitely devote more time then.
Oh, absolutely. And you can email contact@canadiantechpodcast.ca to let us know that you'd like to hand us over and basically any kind of ad you want for that sort of money.
Yep.
We'll do
it. Yep, exactly.
We will sell out.
Exactly. So, if you want someone to wear, you know, funny clothes or a silly hat, that's actually Jameson, because he's not here.
Right. Yes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So
he's got a lot of hair. Like, it's thick. So if you want us to like buzz your logo into the back of his head or something like that, we will gladly pin him down and make it happen.
Excellent idea. Excellent idea. Yeah. Now we may have to clear it with his good wife, Nadia.
No,
we'll be in trouble.
No, but we're taking over here. It's just,
just remember, I don't know about, but Nadia knows my wife. So, you know, I would eventually hear about it.
At
and then I'm going to rat you out, dude. Sorry.
It was all there.
It
was all him.
If I get in trouble, you're getting in trouble too.
That's fine. I'll get in trouble.
Your wife's getting a message.
I'll take the trouble. Oh, she'll be like, oh, Derek said what? Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's fine. That's what my wife's like, the sad realization when she's been married a while.
Yeah. It's like,
or
so,
been together a while.
Yeah. So Derek did this thing, and your point is, like, did you not expect him to do that?
Exactly. So,
okay.
All right. We're gonna end this before we get sued or something. Who knows? Okay, so for the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 65, for Thursday, March 31st, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark.
My name is Derek Silva.
Thank you, and be well.